Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
I come from a small community, maybe 200 miles inland from Vancouver. My people are sometimes referred to as the Okanagan people, but that's the valley that we live in. We're the Nsi'ilchin people. We're Si'ilch. The area that I come from is considered to be a desert. The fragility of the ecosystem requires absolute knowledge and care, or you overextend your use of it, and it can impact directly on how much you have to eat and survival of your coming generations. So a large part of our society and our community and our practice and our philosophy and our governance system are based on understanding that we need to always be vigilant and aware of not over-consuming, and always be aware of how the land gives life and how you as human beings are simply a part of that. And what indigenous means to me is that the interdependence of everything that exists there must be understood, and I must be able to cooperate with all the other living things on the land so as not to make any one of them extinct or remove any one of them for my need. In other words, to collaborate with every living thing so that they can live and I can live in the same level of health, so that they can continue giving to me and to my children and my children's children the health that they deserve in being a life form. This plant here was indigenous somewhere. It could live on its own in an interdependent relationship with its climate, with its land, with its topography. But once you remove it from there, work has to be done to make it live. And this plant no longer is indigenous in this pot, in this room, in this place. If you took it out there and put it in the desert, where we're at now, this plant wouldn't survive the day. And I think of indigenousness, and I think about the way that all of those systems have been changed in my community in a forced way. And I think of the paradigm shift that's required to recover the ability for human beings to live on the land without the kind of the immensity of destructive support systems that are required for this plant or for you. I think about my life, and I think about how land gave me my life. Without the Okanagan land, without the Si'ilch land, and all of the relatives that live on that land, every single thing that sustained my people as food, sustained my people as medicine, sustained my people as clothing and shelter, all of those things that surround us, and I can only express in my language what meaning that has to me, and what meaning that has to be unable to protect those things that are becoming extinguished from that land because of the depth of love and understanding that's required for us to continue to receive that gift and to continue to honor that gift and respect that gift. It's like family members being assaulted with your hands tied, and that I can give you that feeling because you can hear it in my voice, is the same with community. The Nsi'ilchin people, we've been described as an egalitarian society, and by some as a matriarchal society. To us, community is a living system like the land. It's a living diversity There's not one thing in the community or one person that isn't necessary in our understanding of it. It would be like saying, well, I don't need my fingernails or I don't need my toes. Just because you don't use your toes every day or your fingernails every day. Every person in the community fulfills a part that may not be understood either in this generation or the next generation or the coming generations, like every diverse being on the land. We have no way of determining which is more important or which is less important, and we never have an understanding in our community that anyone is actually superior to another. My grandmother tried to explain to us that we would have to find a way to be defensive against how society outside of our traditional community operates, that there is clearly an understanding that some people have more of a right than others, that some people have more of a priority to things than others, and that some people not only are born with that, but are born with the control of and over that, and that that they live and die with that idea of that privilege, that control, that exclusion of others. And I think that part has always been, for me, a real difficult thing. I can't recognize hierarchies, and I don't recognize hierarchies. People are people in terms of how they relate to me. But I notice it on an everyday level. When I go into, say, the community that I live next to in Penticton, depending on how much money you got and how much money you're going to spend, the amount of, respect, and I don't like to use that word, but I'll use the amount of respect paid to them is really related not to them, but to their money and to their power and to their ability to spend. And that's so unhuman and against community, our understanding of what respect is in regard to community. In my community, we have chiefs in our community, women and men. And the idea of chief has to do with how well that person hears everyone and how well that person understands what is going on that might be wrong, that might cause conflict, that might cause danger to the people. And then the word itself, ilmichum, means to be able to take the many strands that are moving outward and twine them into one. And what that means then is that that person must have an immense ability to feel what the community is saying, an immense ability to listen to the things that have been said and the things that are happening and put that together and say it back to the people in a way which everyone says, yeah, that's it. And it's not telling people what to do or leading people or forcing people. It's in being able to verbalize and communicate what everybody else feels and knows and understands and remembers, and being able to put that together to create a movement forward. I established an educational program to recover our traditional practices on the land and in our community and our families called Anaukin. And I've been working at it for 25 years. Anaukin is a word that comes from our language. Anaukin Wih describes how community should operate in terms of that kind of communication. It's an inclusion-seeking process. Rather than exclude the minority, we're actually trying to find ways to help minority articulate, because minorities usually are saying something really different than everybody else. They're the ones experiencing something that really differs from others' experience in the community. And whenever there's an issue or a problem, it's that voice that's most needed. And it's the understanding of that voice that's most necessary towards resolvement. And if that voice can't find a way to articulate, can't be heard, can't be listened to, then we're all in trouble. So Inalkenwich describes the process that makes that happen. We use it in our governance process. We use it in our community dialogues, family circles, our extended family meetings. And the idea isn't to make decisions. The idea is to hear all of the different aspects, all of the different views, and in a dynamic which understands that there are polarities in community because there's diversity. And one of the ways we do that is we try to take the polarities in their larger sense and we give them authority in terms of that context in the community, which can't be usurped by any other area of community. I'll just describe the four polarities that we use in our community. What could be described in our language is something similar to your idea of the elders, maybe. It means those who have had long experience, and it doesn't mean in years. It really means the teachings from the generations and generations and generations past. So you could be part of that group even if you're 20 years old or 10 years old or 30 years old. It's the knowledge that has been passed on to you and that you express and stand for that makes you tlachtlachap in our language. Your thinking and your concerns and your responsibilities are directed towards making sure that everything is remembered that is necessary to make things continue on in a healthy way. That group is usually directly polarized against the group that could be described as istitsmiltit, the youth, the younger generation. Not only people that are young, but people that have a really great urge for innovation and creativity and new things, new ideas, new concepts. And that's always a dynamic that's really needed in any community, in any society, and really encouraged, just as the elders and their bringing forward of all their teachings and immense knowledge is really encouraged. So we tell people, you're not here to debate. You're not here to enforce your agenda. You're not here to convince me of what you think. You're here to listen and to hear the most diverse and opposite view to yours and to understand where it's coming from and why it's there and why that opinion is important in terms of how we make a solution. If there is a problem or a crisis or something that we're trying to resolve that we don't understand, if anybody in this room already has all the answers and already knows it all, then they should have resolved it. Well, you know, why not? You know? So therefore, what that means then, nobody has all the answers. The other two dynamics that exist in the community, there's what we call, in our language, iskaltmich, the male. In our language, we don't have, in our pronoun structure, we don't have a word that is like he or she. And it's quite a difficult thing to speak English language because everything is sort of, you know, gender sort of based in that way. And I talked with my mother about it, my aunt, Jeanette, who I'm named after, and both are medicine women. And I asked them, well, how come we don't have that? And my aunt looked at me and she said, well, it has nothing to do with the person. You know, what does it have to do with the person? And she said, if you were to say he or she in our language, you'd have to point to their genitals, you know? You'd have to point to what's between the legs. She said, and why would you do that? Why would you Why would you talk about a person and point between their legs? You know, she said, it doesn't make any sense. And it doesn't. It doesn't. People are what they do and who they relate to and how they relate to the world. And it has nothing to do with gender, except that there's males and females. So the word is more like male and female. Skaltamihu and tkilmilu. The word skaltamihu actually has to do with how we understand in our philosophy how things work in the world. I guess you'd say the cosmology of things. Tamihu is the spreading outward of diversity of life on the land. And for the male, it's skaltamihu, meaning the one who's able to dream and able to spread outward the life of the human. And in the same way, the female, the word for female in our language is tkilmilu. The separation into family is tkilmilu. Tklem means separating out, and milhu is the covering of the community, the skin of the community. That's the whole of the people, the family systems, in other words. And people in the family are related to each other based on how they feel about each other, how they treat each other. What society is about feeling, how we care about one another, how we love one another, how we protect one another, how we need to make sure there's food for everyone, how we need to make sure that everyone has, you know, warmth and shelter, and how everyone is nurtured emotionally, how you make people feel good, how you celebrate. All of those aspects are what is understood to be under that tkilmilu, the female. So when the family system, which is represented by the female, and the male, which is represented by how the land operates, intersect, the work has to be done to make sure that there's clear understanding between those two dynamics to create balance. All of the things that are structurally on the land, all of the living things and all of the things that are required to make shelter, to get food, to develop all kinds of ways and organizing for that and doing that, are all about how things are done, how things get done. So it's action-based. That's why that's spreading out in that word. When actions are undertaken and when they're done, they have consequences. What you do impacts people, right? And if you do things without thinking and understanding and knowing how it impacts people, you can do a lot of things that are destructive, and you do a lot of things that are destructive, thinking that you're doing it in the name of good or the name of providing and the name of prosperity. And if the male aspect gets, you know, its way, that's what it'll do. It'll just keep doing that, because that's what in our society we think of as patriarchy, right? The patriarchal model is where, you know, it doesn't matter that there's people starving, it doesn't matter that there's people hurting, it doesn't matter that there's minorities that are voiceless, you know, that are not being included, that are being excluded, as long as we keep this thing going so some of the people can get good out of it and some of the people can get privilege out of it. And so that part, I think, is really one of the dynamics that you're talking about here, the male and the female aspects of community, where nurturing and caring for and providing for the feelings that the generations to come are part of the doing continuously. And we think about how we have to listen for the others and how we have to be responsible in putting that together. We think about the extended family of 3-4 generations, aunts, uncles, cousins, grandmas, grandpas, great-grandmas, grand-aunts, and so on, as the repository of a whole lot of skills in terms of how to do community and how to be community on the land, how you take care of each other without destroying it. I don't count a nuclear family as a family. And even they don't stay together in this society. There's a diaspora because of the market economy. You have to move over here for a job. You have to move over there or around the other end of the world. And so family really doesn't exist. It does not exist. There's a yearning for it and a hunger for it and a much deeper need than we think and that we know. In terms of our indigenous community, family is the basis of survival. And you cannot operate community without family. So there's no communities either. Our family systems in our communities are like clan systems. And each family system, extended family system, usually has a role of work in the community. Something like long ago, the guilds in Europe, where you had the bakers and the millers and, you know, so on and so on. And huge families passed down that skill to contribute to the community. Well, in our system, those extended families are the repositories of different kinds of skills. There are medicine families, there are healer families. Medicine families and healer families usually are similar, but one, you could say, are biologist, ethnobotanist, the healer families. The medicine families are the psychologists, psychiatrists, and usually part of the chief's family belongs to that because they have to be psychologists and psychiatrists. And the chief's families and then the people that are hunter families or fishermen or basket makers and so on. And I grew up with my uncle being a medicine man, my mother being a medicine woman, and a winter house leader, dance leader. And the winter dances are giveaways. All of our extended families spent all year long gathering and making and putting aside things that are to be given away during that winter dance. And every year during that winter dance, your mother gives away everything she owns without deciding who it's to be given to. It's simply given in a 10-day ritual of dance. And that I saw all my life. We were told by my mother, my grandmother, my aunts, and my uncles that giving is the only way to be human. That if you don't know that giving is essential to survival, then you haven't been civilized yet, that you don't know how to be human yet. Once we understand, when we're like 2 or 3 years old, the very first things we're taught is to give in those ceremonies. The very first things that we're shown how to do is to give. That when we receive something that we really cherish and we really like and we really care about, that's the first thing we should give. Because our community is to be cherished on that level. Our people and our land is to be cherished on that level. And if you don't know how to give like that, you're poor. You're in poverty. You might hoard all the things that you think your family or your community or your business needs, but you're poor. My mother used to drive through some of the cities and she'd look out there and she'd say, those poor people, those poor, poor people. And she meant it. She wasn't being ironic or sarcastic. She was pointing out what they were missing out on. She was pointing out what they are hungry for and what they're trying to find in accumulating and hoarding and being selfish. She was pointing out what is really, really given to you when you reverse that and what you feel when you give. You all know that feeling. When you give of purity, you all know how good it makes you feel and how great it makes you as a person inside. Christmas time, everybody's so excited about getting and giving and giving. You know, and some people go overboard. Where do you think that feeling comes from? That is a natural feeling to us as humans, That is the real feeling of being human. When we give to our loved ones, you know, we're used to just giving to our favorite chosen loved ones in this outer society, without realizing that you feel the same in giving, whether it's your direct blood relative or whether it's a stranger absolutely not known to you. And when we start understanding that principle, we lead our lives by giving continuously, never ever thinking about what you get back from it or exchanging it for something that you want somebody to do for you. In fact, that's not called giving in our language. We call it kamila. There's no word for greed in our language that I could, I've tried to find a word for greed in our language, and there isn't a word. What we found instead is that word kamila, and we use it to mean a person that, is expecting to get something back, or expecting to have more than another, and expecting to eat more than another, you know, and we describe people as becoming that, and we call them an ethnas in our language. And what that means is a destructor of people. Because what kamila means is to be able to stop the giving. Ka means to stop, and mil means to give. You give out. It goes out to wherever it goes. Kamila means to stop the giving, to put an obstacle between the giving and yourself. An obstacle to the rest of everybody getting what, you know, is necessary and needed and deserved by them. I want to tell you that my language is one of the languages that's on the brink of extinction. And these words that I'm describing to you are immensely important words that belong in the understanding of our humanity. In our community, you cannot ask. You cannot go to a person and say, I want you to do this for me, or I want you to do that for me. All you can do is clarify for them what is happening and what the consequences are in your family or your community or on your land, and clarify for them what needs to be done and how it needs to be done. And then it comes down to each person being human in that way.
Excerpts from a talk by Indigenous author, teacher, and elder Jeanette Armstrong. A video of her whole talk is at gifteconomy.com. That's gift-economy.com. Wings thanks your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, author of the book Il Dono, The Gift. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle Is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service. Thank you.
listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
Tune in to KBOO on Thursday, September 16th for KBOO's Board of Directors Candidate Forum from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. Hear from candidates Ash